This whole trip was just like that, just incredible. We were supposed to go to Mont Saint Michel, and they were having an event at Mont Saint Michel, so they had to jumble the schedule around. So they said, okay, well, instead of going to Mont Saint Michel today, we're going to go to the Basilica at Lisieux.
Oh, wonderful.
Went to the Basilica at Lisieux. They bring the relics of Saint Therese out once a year for a week. We got there the last hour of the last day. And got to witness, got to venerate the relics of Saint Therese, and then watch the procession coming out. And when I went on this trip, I expected the saint that I was going to be obsessed with, that was going to have the biggest impact on me, was Saint Bernadette. I've had I named my youngest daughter Megan Bernadette. And I expected she was going to be the one that was going to have the most impact. But then 6 weeks after the trip, the relics of St. Therese of Lisieux came to Washington, D.C. So I got to venerate them again at the Shrine of the Immaculate Conception. And then in January, I went to Illinois, to Damien, Illinois, to the Shrine of St. Therese of Lisieux. And it was so cold. It was 0 degrees outside. So it's funny. It's St. Therese has been the saint that's been just popping up everywhere.
Oh, beautiful.
And in April, I welcomed a friend. I was sponsored a friend into the Catholic Church after about 5 years of working on him to convert him. And he took the name of St. Therese. So this was a place I had to... So then on top of the trip to Portugal, Spain, France, all those places... like I said, in January, I went to Indiana, Illinois, and Wisconsin. I went to the Shrine of Our Lady of Champion in Wisconsin, or the Shrine of Therese of Lisieux in Illinois, and the Shrine of Christ the Redeemer in Indiana. And then in June, I went to the Shrine of St. Anthony of Padua in Pittsburgh. It's just been that kind of thing. I just keep going. In November, I'm going to Guadalupe. I'm going to Mexico for a week. But all of these different saints that I'm encountering on the way, and I knew that when I went to Montreal, there was two places I wanted to go. I wanted to go to the Basilica of Notre Dame, which is one of the most beautiful churches in the world. And St. Joseph Oratory, which of course is, I was struck by how huge it is, and it's so high up, and it's just so massive, and then it's this cross, got to touch the tomb of St. Andre Bessette, and then when Sister Grace told me there's someone here related to St. Andre Bessette, I was like, that's the Lord working. That's God working.
Did you see his picture here at the when you came in? He's a big part of our household here. He's not only the doorkeeper up in the oratory, but he's our doorkeeper here also. And then in the chapel.
Can I get a picture of that?
Oh, sure.
Wait a minute. I've got it on record. I'll get it later. Okay. Because I don't want to interrupt the recording. But anyway, so that's my story and how I wound up to be here. But I understand you're related to him?
Yes, he's my great great grand uncle. He was from a lodge family, and he had two sisters who lived here in Rhode Island in my hometown of West Warwick. And he also had siblings that lived not too far away in Connecticut. So when he was not a young religious but older, his superiors allowed him to travel, and he would come here to this area to visit his sisters and their descendants, and also Connecticut and surrounding areas. So there's a very deep attachment here in Rhode Island among French Canadians for Saint Andre, because they have relatives who have now passed on, who have met him, some receiving miracles from him, and so on. So as I said, his sister Alphonsine was my great-grandmother. So he used to come and visit her family here, Sister Leo Coutillo also. And when my mother was a little girl, about 9, her mother and father would host him at their house for dinner and so on. And my mother was about 9, and she said when he would come, it was before the time of television and so on. This was back about the late 1920s. And word would spread that Brother Andre was in town, and people would go to the houses where he was staying. There were a few houses that he would stay, either for meals, for overnight, and that sort of thing. So my mother was about 9. He had come for dinner, and then it was he left to go visit local people who were sick and not able to get out, with the understanding he was coming back. So word spread that St. Andre, well, it was Brother Andre at that time, was going to be at John Boulet's house. That's where I grew up too. The house stayed in our family for a few generations. And my mother said by the time he came back, there were close to 100 people in the house. And among those people was someone, Lionel Maynard, who had tuberculosis of the spine. And his spine was eaten away and decayed by the tuberculosis. And he had worn like a metal brace corset for some time and not able to walk and difficulties. So she said Brother Andre walked over to him almost immediately and spoke with him briefly and then said, "Get up, God has healed you." So Mr. Maynard was used to being infirmed and not able to move. So he just sat there. So Andre repeated to him, "Get up and walk. God has healed you." So Mr. Maynard got up and started walking across the double parlors, and everybody started crying and praying and praising God and so on. So that particular miracle was one of the miracles that they used to open his cause, because it was well documented with x-rays before the healing of the decayed spine and so on, and then later on all the improvements and so on. So before his, when they opened his cause, the oratory used to send representatives to Rhode Island, Massachusetts area to talk to people who knew him, relatives, or he had a lot of close friends too, and to get their witnesses. So I have a book upstairs that gives the witness to this particular miracle and its impact and so on that my mother witnessed. She was about 9 years old at that time, about 1925. So that's how I'm connected.
Well, I will tell you something that is going to astound you, that's going to blow you away, because this is so incredible how God works. So I'm kind of doing two things at once. I'm going to all of these places, different. So Canada is now the fifth country that I visited, and I'd never been to Canada before until you know the trip that I wrapped up this morning.
You left Canada this morning?
I left Montreal this morning.
Oh, so you flew here?
No, I drove.
Oh, you left early. What time did
4 a.m.
Oh,
I left Montreal at 4 a.m. to get here.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, boy. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But what's amazing is I basically trying to do two things and unrelated, and God has kind of converged them together.
Oh.
Because the other thing that I'm trying to do is check off as many states as I can that I visited the United States. Now, by the time I was telling you, by the time me and my wife split, I'd only been to 13 American states.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This is now 21.
Oh,
wow. Now 21.
Oh.
So, but it's, I'm only here because I wanted to add another state.
Oh.
And so I looked up, okay, Catholic sites in Rhode Island.
Oh.
I said, well, I'm there. And then I saw Teresa of Lisieux, and I have a deep affinity for Teresa of Lisieux.
Yeah.
But I had no idea that St. Andre Bessette
had
a connection to Rhode Island.
Oh, yes.
And it's amazing. The Lord takes me from Montreal to Rhode Island.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing how
it
he
is. Very, very
he was working behind the scenes to bring me and you together. What are the odds?
Yes.
I had no idea I would meet you. I had no idea there was any connection to St. Andre Bessette.
Oh.
And yet here we are talking.
Yes.
So I will tell you, I know only a little bit about his story.
Uh-huh.
And maybe you can kind of help fill in the blanks so I can kind of understand. But first of all, how did he come to go from Rhode Island to Montreal?
Well, he was a native of Canada. He was from a large family. A number of his siblings, three of them died a very, very young age, and 8 or 9 of them survived. And when he was 9, he lived in St. Grégoire, up outside of Montreal. If you drive in, you go through that area where he grew up. And when he was 9 years old, his father worked in the woods, a woodsman chopping down trees and so on, and a tree fell on him and killed him, leaving his wife with all these children. And he was sickly. He was baptized almost immediately upon birth because he was a frail child. He had stomach problems and so on, and he had a hard time keeping food down, and that stayed with him all through his life. And the mother could not take care of all the children by herself, so some went to relatives and so on. And then when he was 12, his mother died. So at 12 years old, he was an orphan and also sickly. And he had an uncle who took him in, and Mr. Nadeau, I think it was, and he was a very strong, robust fellow. Did a lot of outdoor farming kind of work. So he was not well acquainted with somebody like Andre, who was weak, having problems with food, and not able to do a lot of heavy masculine work. So he tried at a number of different things to do different work, all kinds of different things, but he didn't have the strength to do it.
The stamina, yeah.
And when he was about 20, there was a great emigration of people from Canada to the States because of the textile mills here in New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Connecticut, and so on. And there was the Civil War was going on, so he joined that emigration. He didn't want to be a burden to his uncle and relatives. So he traveled to work in mills in Connecticut. And some people say he worked in one in Natick, Rhode Island, too, which is in West Warwick. And but he didn't. But then he would have to take breaks from working in the mills because of all the dust and the textiles and so on. And he would get a job at a farm and kind of go back and forth between the farming work and the industrial. So he learned English while he was here. He was from French-speaking Quebec, and he learned English, which really served him in life later on. And then he emigrated up to the border area, and there was a Catholic church there pastored by Father André Provençal. And Brother André also had a brother that was living up in that border area. So this priest recognized Saint Brother André's great piety, that he'd see him praying in the church, his devotions, and he invited him to work for him in the parish. And recognizing his faith and his devotion, he thought that Brother André had a vocation. And he spoke to him about joining the brothers, the Congregation of the Holy Cross, which had priests as well as brothers.
And that's who founded the University of Notre Dame.
Yes. And but Brother André had not received an education when he was growing up in Quebec in the 1950s. There was not free education where all the kids went to school. So and this was a teaching order, but Father Provençal contacted the Religious of the Holy Cross and said, I have a saint to send you. He used those words, I'm sending you a saint. And they realized that he could not be a teacher. They had some institutions that were starting up in Montreal and not too far away, but that he could do other things. So they admitted him to do porter, wash the floors, do the laundry.
Now, at what church was this at?
Well, I'm forgetting the name of the church that Father Provençal was at. I've got it upstairs.
At that because minute. I thought at one point he became the porter at the Notre Dame Basilica. Is that, no, never
no,
did?
No, I've read so many biographies of Brother Andre, and absolutely none of them, and I used to go and speak to religious of the Holy Cross that were involved in his biography, too.
Okay.
And Brother Laurent Boucher, and it has never been said or mentioned any place that he ever did anything for Notre Dame Basilica. So that's where that's coming from. The Holy Cross had a school right across the street from where the Basilica is now, long before the Basilica was there, and it was called Collège Notre Dame. So in Canada, they call their high schools Collège, and it was Notre Dame Collège. So I think that's what you heard, Notre Dame.
So he was at the university.
No, it was a high
school. It was basically a high school.
A boarding school.
Okay.
And a boarding school and a high school.
Okay. And so here's where I'm trying to make the connection, because mm-hmm. I found out that over the years, people really became to love him and have a high devotion to him.
Yes.
To such extent that I've heard that when he died, there were a million people at his funeral. How did that come to pass?
If you're really interested, Salt and Light TV has an excellent video that they produced. They put it on EWTN too. When he was porter at the school, the reality that God was selecting him to be an instrument in the hand of Saint Joseph for miraculous healing started. So when he started praying for people who were sick and using Saint Joseph's oil just as an act of faith, not as a superstition or anything, or to pray with Saint Joseph medals, people were miraculously healed. And it started with a boy in the infirmary, it started with a religious brother, and then some things got published. And then word started spreading that Brother André the porter at Collège Notre Dame had a special gift from God for healing through Saint Joseph. So people started pouring in at that poor little Collège Notre Dame to ask for Brother André's help. And many, 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 many sick people were coming in, and the school authorities were overwhelmed. You know, they were concerned about the health of the students, the families were concerned about their children, but there was like a flood of people that started once word got out that there was a brother who could heal people. So then there was a tramway station across the street from the college. The spot is still there. And they said, you have to meet the sick at the tramway station now. So the sick people were not welcomed at the college, Notre Dame. That's where you hear Notre Dame. He had to meet them at the tramway station. There are two movies about Brother André. One is a dramatization that takes liberties, and the other one is a fairly good documentary they made after his canonization. But at the same time, Brother André had this sense that Saint God and Saint Joseph wanted to do something very special on Mount Royal. It was just empty land then, no buildings. It was just empty land. So André had a statue of Saint Joseph facing the hill, and prayers that Saint Joseph's desires would occur there. And eventually, the owner of that land sold the property to the Holy Cross, and Brother André asked if he could just build a little prayer chapel, a little oratory on the hill. And they gave him permission as long as he found volunteer laborers and the monies to do it. So he used to cut students here for 5 cents, and he saved all the nickels, and he bought lumber and stuff to do that.
So I don't want to interrupt you, but the oratory that I went to is not little. So what happened here?
Yeah, you didn't get to the the primitive chapel while you were there.
What's that?
You didn't get to the primitive chapel while you were there.
The chapel?
The primitive chapel. See, when it first started, it was just a little space like this. And then, of course, all the sick people, they started...
I think I may have seen the little chapel while I was there. That's what it originally was.
But that's once it got built up. But originally, it was just a little tiny place for an altar with chairs outside.
So was it was built up after his death and his canonization?
No.
While he was still alive.
Oh, yes, yeah, while he was alive. So it was just a little tiny place, but then they had to make it bigger because more and more people came, more and more people. They had to make it bigger, more and more people, thousands of people. So Brother Andre, he was a bishop there at the time who had always desired to lift up St. Joseph there in Montreal and to build a church to him. So God working through Brother Andre and God working through this bishop, it came together. And the Holy Cross took on the work of starting what you saw as the basilica. So the little chapel was straight up where the basilica was, and there was a pathway going up. So they moved that little one off way to the right, and then they built the crypt church, the level where you have all the crutches and canes and things. And then, so that was going on, and more sick people. I mean, it's incredible. If you watch the documentary, it's worth viewing. Hundreds of people a day would want to visit with him and give their requests to him. And he had a little office there by this time. That started about 1909. He used to joke about how he had been porter all those years, that Holy Cross showed him the door and kept him there all those years. But then they transferred him to live across the street up there as caretaker. So while he was alive, the crypt church was built, but then they had World War I and the Depression going on, so donations were low, and they were giving, the Holy Cross said, it's not right that this war is going on and we keep this money. We have to help with what's going on in the world. And it was followed by the Depression. And so they had the foundation of the basilica level on top and no roof. And the architects and engineers were saying, if it doesn't get a roof with Canadian winters, it's going to ruin all that we've done. So Brother Andre said to the Holy Cross Fathers, he said, put a statue of Brother Andre there in that area where the basilica is being built up. If he wants a roof over his head, he will get it. It's a wonderful story. So they had a procession. They brought a beautiful statue of St. Joseph up there into that basilica area that hadn't gotten a roof yet. And within a short time, money started coming in again so they could finish the project. Wow. So, but he died. So by the time he died, he was known as the miracle worker of Montreal. And his fame had spread not just through Canada, but also through the United States and so on. So it was known that for his funeral, the trains had to add extra cars, extra train travel up to Montreal to people who wanted to go and say their respects and goodbye to him in the January winter of Montreal. And over 1 million people went to visit him before his actual time of his funeral. The movie shows all the people that are coming up Mount Royal, people going by his casket. They have the actual film footage for people to see.
Where can I find this movie?
You can find it if you just do a little search, you know, put in a search, movie, St. Andre Bisset, St. Andre Bisset. But there are two. There's a one, it's they take liberties, it's a fictionalized account. I shouldn't say, it is. They make it a story of a niece, a grandniece from actually Rhode Island, going to visit him up at the oratory, and it's about their conversation, their encounter, talks about the relatives in Rhode Island and so on. But that did not occur. They just used that as a poetic vehicle to tell the story of his life there at the oratory. But the documentary was made after his canonization. It shows his canonization and has...
And when was he canonized, this thing?
2010.
So fairly recently.
Yeah. Okay. I went to Rome for the canonization. And then up in Montreal, they had a favorite son at the Olympic Stadium up there, or Expo, one of those. And they had wonderful festivities up in Montreal, too. So
it's kind of my discovery of St. Therese of Lisieux, you know, kind of changing gears here. So we stayed at Lisieux, and it was the one place that we were supposed to go back and forth to. There's several different places, and they decided to go to Normandy Beach, was one of the places. But I decided I didn't want to do that. It just didn't fit with the mood of what I was trying to get out of this pilgrimage. So I took the liberty of walking through the streets of Lisieux. And it was, and when I got back to the hotel after walking through the streets of Lisieux, thinking that I'm walking down streets that St. Therese could have walked down, I was shown a picture in the hotel, and the miraculous picture in the hotel was of the bombing of Lisieux.
Oh.
And that 80% of Lisieux was completely wiped out. And the only things that were miraculously preserved was that hotel, the home of St. Therese, the parish church of St. Therese.
Really? Mom.
And
the Carmel?
Her...
convent?
Was that?
Convent.
And the convent, yeah.
That's
and in the convent, two bombs actually fell into the convent and were left unexploded.
Wow, I never heard that before.
Yeah, so it's a most incredible thing. And so I had already read Story of a Soul. But then St. Therese just got a hold of me. I've read three more books since then. So I'm trying to...
They were contemporaries. Andre and Therese were contemporaries. They were alive in the 1800s at the same time. And God was working powerfully.
When you say they're contemporaries, they knew each other?
No, but they were living
at the same period
time.
Of time. Yeah.
And both were very humble souls. Brother Andre is somebody everybody can relate to. He was so poor, you know, an orphan, no education, his working in the factories. He was just such an approachable.
Like Bernadette.
Yes.
Very similar to Bernadette.
Yes, yeah.
The other thing that struck me, and I just kind of came to this conclusion on my own, I've never heard anybody say this, but the time period in which St. Therese, was here, kind of makes a bridge between Lourdes and Fatima.
Oh,
You know, when you think about when the apparitions at Lourdes were and the apparitions at Fatima and the significance of the two, she's kind of a bridge between the two, isn't she?
Well, I've never thought of it that way. I think we have some great happenings, divine happenings, during this time period from 1850, 1917 at Fatima. Great things are occurring. The time Brother Andre entered into the Holy Cross, it was the same year that the Pope called St. Joseph patron of the church. So the Pope's lifting up Joseph as patron of the church. Andre is going into religious life with the Holy Cross and then lifting up St. Joseph before the world. I mean, it's the largest basilica to St. Joseph in the world. He's such a humble, poor instrument, you know. And
that's interesting because Therese had quite a devotion to St. Joseph too, didn't she?
Yes, but she's not recognized so much for that as her little way, her little way of sanctity.
Yeah.
And then Blessed Saint Bernadette with Our Blessed Mother in Fatima, and so on. So God worked very powerfully through poor instruments like that, the little children at Fatima, and so on.
I'd like to show you some pictures from my trip if you'd like to see them.
You know, I would be interested, but I had a commitment. I have a former student that's getting married at this hour to be praying in the chapel for the wedding. The wedding started at 12.
Well, I'll be back for Mass. Maybe I'll see you there.
Yeah, I won't be at Mass.
Oh, you won't?
I'll see you here on the grounds.
Yeah.
Sister Grace offered to show you a movie, right? If you would like to see a part of that movie about Brother Andre, too, we could put that out so you could watch a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Yeah, I want to see the grounds now and see how long that takes me, and then we'll go from there.
Yes, but see, I'm always impressed. I've been here since 2005. What a faithful friend Saint Therese is. People come and they share their life experiences and how they know Saint Therese, why they're here to give thanks, and that how faithful she is and as a friend.
Now, so. I will tell you, I run a Catholic blog. It's a registered, a federally registered 501c3. With your permission, I'd like to take our interview and post that so people can listen to it.
Oh, sure.
Hear the story.
No problems with that.
I appreciate that.
Yes, I make an attempt to be as accurate as possible with information that I pass on.
So. It's just fascinating, the connections, because I had no idea there was any connection with Rhode Island and Montreal and St. Andre Bisset.
Oh, yes.
This was checking off the next step.
Something. Yes. Yeah. Coming straight from the oratory. Yeah. That's God. God's walking with you.